with bodies piled up in a pyramid.
Probably the photograph you're talking about is at Dachau. There's a picture of bodies, and they were waiting to be cremated. Nobody contends that those bodies were gassing victims, though. That's not seriously claimed.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Jeff, first-time caller from Malibu. Jeff, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Fine. Please, join us.
Bill, I'm 23 years old, and I too am a Jew, and I tend to have very emotional ties to this. Although my family wasn't in the Holocaust like yours, we came here at the turn of the century, and we immigrated through Ellis Island. A lot of the knowledge we have of the Holocaust is hearsay, as you might say, but nonetheless, this is what we've heard. I have like 3 points I'd like to make if I can.
Sure, please do.
First of all, I just want to say I'm a little bit upset that the Simon Wiesenthal people did not appear to debate, because I find that the views being put forth by Mr. Weber are so outrageous that they need to be countered by somebody from the center in order to sort of balance it out in a way, because no matter how outrageous certain views seem to be, it's very important to always counter them, because, I mean, everybody thought that Hitler was very outrageous as well, and they just discounted him, and, you know, look what happened. And not, I mean, if it wasn't for Hitler, we wouldn't be having this debate right now, I guess. The second thing is, the best people to talk to about whether or not the Holocaust really happened, the Jews are, a lot of Jewish people are calling in, but if you really want to know what really happened there, maybe it would be important to talk to the Nazis, because the Nazi party today is very proud of the fact that the Holocaust happened, and they don't dispute it at all. And the reason why they're not calling in right now, and the reason why they're not disputing Mr. Weber, is because they're happy that there's somebody like Mr. Weber that's disputing the existence of the Holocaust, because they're waiting for it to happen again. They're waiting for us to forget about it so they can make their move. And I think that and because of that, I feel that people like Mr. Weber are much more threatening to Jews today than the Nazis ever were, because if this kind of disinformation propagates, a new Holocaust could very much be inevitable. Anti-Semitism is a result of the distortion of facts, and it's happened throughout history. Modern Christian anti-Semitism always focused on the death of Jesus, and it was always said that the Jews killed Jesus, and 25 years ago we were absolved of this. But nonetheless, this tradition seemed to have been programmed into the religion, and many Jews died because of it. Islamic anti-Semitism kind of centered on that the Jews somehow forged the Bible, and now we have this. You know, I mean, this is just ridiculous. I'm just beside myself.
You made your point, Jeff. Thank you very much for the call. I have a question before you respond to Jeff. Okay, and I'm trying to remember what I have seen. Okay, I'll tell you else something that I've seen distinctly. Clearly, that you cannot tell me I didn't see it. I have seen films of men, women, and children naked, lined up in pits and shot. Hundreds and hundreds of men, women, and children killed at pits. I have seen those films.
Well, there were some shootings of Jews in the Soviet, in the occupied Soviet territories. That's true. There's no question of that. I mean, but look, we've also seen pictures of Vietnamese that were killed in massacres in Vietnam. That doesn't mean that there was an American policy to exterminate the people of Vietnam.
Okay, so you're not disputing the fact that the atrocities happened. The basic contention is that it didn't happen on a mass governmental scale with a plan to exterminate a whole group of people.
Bill, what we say are three things, and it's not just we. There's professors, doctors, scholars on this subject who say three things. First, there was no policy or program by the German government to exterminate the Jews of Europe during the Second World War. Second, the figure of 6 million exterminated Jews during the war is an irresponsible exaggeration. It's not true. I mean, there's no. Third, we say that stories of mass extermination in gas chambers are not true. Those are the 3 points we make.
Ready to take some more phone calls? Anything you want to?
Yeah.
You haven't had a chance much to talk to these people, so
I'd like to respond to the previous caller.
Please do, Ted.
He was quite illogical. He said, first of all, that, our views were so outrageous, whereby you'd think they just collapse out of their own nonsense. But then he wished there'd been someone to debate us. Wished that Mr. Breitbart had deigned to debate us, meaning evidently we're not so outrageous. Secondly, he claimed, he talked about anti-Semitism. I think it's an insult. He talked about Nazis. He talked about a future Holocaust that we were going to start. Nothing is to us more ridiculous than the notion that by putting the facts of World War II straight, the non-Jews, the Gentiles of America, or anywhere else in the world, are going to rush out and kill all the rest of the Jews. It's ridiculous. In fact, it's insulting to Americans to claim that by putting historical facts straight, you're going to start a massive pogrom.
Why do you do it then? You know, why do you make your living?
There's two reasons, I think, to say that. First of all, the obvious reason that we want for historical accuracy. We want truth in history. Mm-hmm. Second, but more than that, there's no question that the Holocaust story has assumed an enormous importance in American social, public, cultural life. It's talked about constantly. There's an agency of the United States government called the United States Holocaust Memorial Council, taxpayer-supported, funded organization that is devoted to this thing. The Holocaust story has acquired an enormous importance in American public political life. The U.S. government and the 50 state governments every year are involved in things. We believe that this is entirely outrageous. It's outrageous to focus on the fate of the Jews during the Second World War as a metaphor for all of humanity. And what we think is even worse is that increasingly over the years, not merely Hitler or the Nazis or even the Germans are blamed for this, but the entire non-Jewish world is held collectively responsible for this crime.
Okay, we're talking to Ted O'Keefe, editor of the Journal Historical Review, and Mark Weber, director, Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, Holocaust Revisionists. We have as our guests Mark Weber, director for Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, and Ted O'Keefe, the editor of Journal of Historical Review, Holocaust Revisionists. Three claims. Number one, there was no program of German extermination of the Jews. 6 million Jews did not die in extermination camps in the war. And what was the third gentleman?
No gas chambers.
No gas chambers. And now let's get back to the phones with David, first-time caller from San Bernardino. David, you're on KFI.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Good. Gentlemen, now, at the beginning of the show, I think I remember somebody saying that the reason that this Holocaust, quote, myth by you guys has been told is because one reason was to get the Jewish state of Israel.
In fact, Bill Handel said that, and Aaron Breitbart sort of implied that. That's not what we say. The Holocaust story of extermination Jews began during the Second World War as Allied propaganda. There are many people who have an interest in the Holocaust extermination story. It's not just a Jewish invention or anything like that. That's a wrong way to characterize it. It's clear, though, of course, the State of Israel, that the Holocaust story is very important for the State of Israel. Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Shamir, and so forth have on numerous occasions justified policies of the Israeli government by making references to the Holocaust. We believe that's their own business, but what we think is very, very wrong is to use the Holocaust as a sort of a part of American political life. For example, if a person says, well, I don't believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ, nobody seems to mind. But if a person says, well, I don't really believe that 6 million Jews were killed during the war, people have been dismissed from their teaching position. I mean, all sorts of things have happened to people who question this dogma. This is an icon in America. The Holocaust story has become a kind of almost quasi-religious icon in our society, and we believe that that's wrong. The Holocaust story does have, as a number of Jewish writers have made the point explicitly, has a political, social dimension.
It's worth pointing out in a number of other societies said to be democratic, such as West Germany, France, and Canada even, doubting or challenging the Holocaust is a crime.
Why is Germany still paying reparations to the State of Israel for the Jews that were killed?
Well, I've written an essay, in fact, on that subject, and it's a very interesting thing. But, I mean, one of the things that the West German government pays money, both the State of Israel and to individual Jews around the world.
You bet.
On the basis of the actions against the policies, German policies against the Jews. This sets, I believe, a very, very dangerous precedent of collective guilt for actions. Most of the people paying this money, of course, are people who were not alive even during the Second World War. Money paid to the State of Israel is paid to a country that wasn't even in existence at the time of the Second World War. You had a caller a few evenings ago on this program by a man when Joe Crummy was here who wanted compensation for slavery.
Right.
And Joe Crummy and others disagree with him. But one of the reasons they disagreed because they disagreed with this principle of collective guilt, that a group of people who isn't even personally responsible for an action somehow should be held accountable.
Let me argue, though. Let me ask you this, okay? You say the Holocaust doesn't exist and you have some proof and you have, or you claim to have some proof and you certainly have some theories. But let's go to the other end, all right? The reason there is a collective guilt, because obviously to the Germans, the Holocaust is a very real thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be paying the reparations. They obviously believe the Holocaust occurred.
When the entire discussion began in Germany in 1953 about this reparations business, Konrad Adenauer, who was chancellor at the time, made it clear later in his memoirs that it was essential to pay this as a key to good relations with the West.
Wait a second, you really believe that? In the meantime, Germany's being built up on the Marshall Plan. Money is being poured in. The U.S. State Department doesn't give a damn about Jews. I got to tell you, it took my dad 11 years to come into this country. My dad, he applies to come into this country in 1945 and claims he is a victim of the Holocaust. Now, I believe him because he's my father and I know he's not a liar. So, you know what the U.S. State Department does? Too bad, Mr. Handel. We don't want Jews in here. So he
said that. Does he have a document to that effect?
It only took him 11 years to get into the quota system. No one
was
said...
Was there a right to come into the United States at that time?
Well, let me tell you, if there was, you're talking about how Germany felt that it would be important to the West. The West didn't care about Jews.
No one wanted the Jews.
In fact, Mr. Handel,
it was the U.S. government that told the German government at that time that it was important to pay reparations of some kind to Jews in order to make good relations with the United States.
Then why weren't Jews let in the United States?
I don't know.
Well, actually, a lot were.
That's true.
Don't generalize from your father's experience.
Very few were let in. You know, I'll tell you who was let in without any problem. Germans were let in, who worked at Peenemünde were brought in, scientists were brought in. But I'm talking about immigrants after the war simply weren't allowed in. The United States just shut it down.
One reason that more Jews were let in, because Zionist organizations wanted Jews going from Europe to Israel, not to the United States. And there was a policy by the Zionist organizations at that time to channel Jews, as it were, from Europe at the end of the war, people who survived the camps, survived ghettos and so forth.
An awful lot of Jews wanted to come to the United States and were not let in.
Okay, there is some truth to that. And in fact, they were, as I said, Zionist organizations prefer that they go to Israel, just as today Zionist organizations wish that Soviet Jews would go to Israel rather than the United States.
But let me go back in terms of the collective guilt, and I want to discuss something. If one believes the Holocaust existed, and a lot of people do, I mean, you are in the minority, you have to agree with that. What do you see wrong with the collective guilt of a country that did this to another people? And reparations should not be paid. Take the side of a belief in the Holocaust, and then tell me what is wrong with reparations if one believes that it did exist.
Bill, the reason I believe it's wrong is because there's no end to it. There's no end to the number of people around the world whose ancestors have been persecuted.
Not ancestors. Talk about people that are alive today.
Well, wait a minute. The money that's paid through the reparations from West Germany is not confined just to people who were personally affected by the Holocaust.
I think it is.
Wait a minute. Money is paid to Israel as a country.
I understand. And that's for a period of time.
It goes on for quite a long time. It's been already 50 years since 1900. But second of all, my point is the whole point of collective guilt is a very dangerous one. Who pays? Should Germans pay who were born at the end of the war? What about Germans who live in Germany whose parents, for example, were opposed to Hitler?
Tell me this, Bill. Do you believe that Israeli Jews share a collective guilt for dispossessing the Palestinians?
No.
No. do you believe? Perhaps if you did, you'd extend that collective guilt to the Germans
maybe.
For sending all that money to Israel to help the dispossession.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Joyce, first-time caller from Los Angeles. Joyce, you're on KFI.
Hi, I wanted to ask those people, what's the reason, you know, for them to go ahead and, you know, do all those things and try to convince people that the Holocaust was never exist and all those things?
I think they gave the reason, but I'll let them give it again. Gentlemen?
What
are your reasons for doing what you do?
Well, truth is one. I mean, obviously. I mean, all of us at one time, like, believed in the 6 million, that 6 million Jews were exterminated during the war. And through my own investigation and others, we came to the conclusion this is not true. That's one thing. The second is that the Holocaust story is used as a political mallet in our society, a political bludgeon for political social purposes. And we believe that's wrong. We believe that's wrong that in our society...
To start it, like, two people on your own, just go ahead and do it and try to convince people around the world that it's not true and try to search about it?
Well, ma'am, there are people, those who take the view that we do are not confined to just us. There's scholars around the world. I mean, some of them Jewish, in fact.
Can I ask you another question?
Yes, ma'am.
Were you alive at the time of the Holocaust?
No, I was not, ma'am.
Okay. There are so many people around the world that were alive around the Holocaust, just like my grandmother, and she's still alive. And she was telling me a story when I was a little girl still. She lives now in France, and when I was a little girl, she was telling me all kinds of stories about the Holocaust, which I believe her, because there is no reason for her to tell me as a little girl all those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, when I came to America, I hear the exact same stories from other people that are still
Ma'am.
Alive.
It's a good point,
Ma'am.
Joyce. Let's go ahead.
It's very possible.
Let's talk about the different stories. Go ahead.
Your grandmother may be telling the absolute truth. I don't know what she actually told you. But what that does not. When one means by the Holocaust that the Jews were persecuted, they were rounded up, they were put in camps, they died, that they were put in ghettos and so forth, we don't say that that's not true. That's not what we say at all. And your grandmother, I'm sure, and many other Jews who were in Europe during the Second World War underwent oftentimes a very horrendous treatment. But that's not what we say. We say that there was no policy or program to exterminate the Jews of Europe during the Second World War.
More to the point is we haven't heard whether her grandmother experienced or witnessed anything. There are millions and tens of millions of Americans alive today who have seen things on newsreel. They're completely wrong and believe them absolutely implicitly. Furthermore, they'll tell you they were virtually eyewitnesses.
All right, we're going to come back, and we'll let you respond some more. We're going to get some more phone calls here, so hang on, don't go away. This is Bill Handel, KFI AM 640, sitting in for Joe Crummy. Let's go to Ken Gallagher in the KFI News Center now. This is Bill Handel, still sitting in for Joe Crummy, wondering who chooses this music for him. It is 8:33 here at now it goes into another tune. Terrific. 8:33, KFI AM 640, 8:34 almost, and I'm sitting in for Joe Crummy, who's back tomorrow night. And the discussion tonight is Holocaust and Holocaust revisionism. And we have Ted O'Keefe, editor of the Journal of Historical Review, and Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, and also connected with the Institute of Historical Review. Both these men claim that gas chambers simply didn't exist in these camps. Six million Jews did not die in the gas chambers and in the camps as a result of German extermination policy. Let's go to the phones. Sharon calling from Lancaster. Hello, Sharon. You're on KFI.
Hi, Bill. I'm a Jew, and I would like nothing better than to revise the fact that 1 million or 5 million Jews died during the Holocaust. I would like to revise the fact that my mother, being one of 15 children, was one of three survivors. My father, one of six, who was one of two survivors. Their wives, my aunts and uncles, their wives and children also did not survive. A 15-year-old female cousin was sterilized and made into a prostitute, and it was witnessed by a survivor. She and her mother, stripped naked, walked into a shower and never walked out again. Nothing these men can say will ever make me believe that they died of any illness, nor any of the other nearly 50 members of my family that were exterminated by Hitler. Because of this, I have read many, many volumes on Hitler and on the people under him, Achmann, Mengele, everybody. There was a plot. These people were gassed. They were shot. They were experimented on, and these men are dangerous. I was 47 years old when you came on the air with these men, and I feel 67 now, and I'm scared to death.
All right, Sharon, thanks. Gentlemen, I assume you get a lot of that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You,
96 people died in the family and so forth.
Well, it's true.
It's not necessarily true. These figures are very imprecise. The interesting thing is that the you talked earlier, Bill, about the Germans keeping meticulous records.
Wait a second. Why would someone, you know, say 45 cousins in our family and three survive? Why would someone make up a figure and say it was only 12 cousins? Why would you want to add cousins that didn't exist, Ted? I mean, you know how many cousins you have.
Nice,
you know how many uncles you have.
The nice answer is that somehow during the war and after the war, a number of people who survived were lost track of. A nastier answer, which can't be excluded, is that some people exaggerate.
Well, another possibility is that maybe she did lose those relatives during the war,
right?
For any number of reasons,
right? And they could have died by illness. They
for
could
any
have whatever.
Number of reasons.
But there are an awful lot of people out there who lost an awful lot of relatives.
That's very true.
I mean, millions and millions if you track it all down. I mean,
in many countries during the war.
Yeah.
Let's keep things in perspective.
Yeah, let's put things in context.
Let's keep things in perspective.
Okay,
for instance,
Russia lost 20 million.
For instance, according to the official figures at Dachau, something like 30,000. People died in the 12 years, inmates died in the 12 years existence of that camp. At Dresden, in two nights in February 1945, a figure estimated at around 250,000 by David Irving, one of the leading experts on the bombing. Two nights, 250,000 people.
Germans.
100,000 people, 80 to 100,000 people in one night in Tokyo.
Yeah, we know that.
1945.
But we don't refute that, you see.
Okay.
I don't think there's any Hiroshima revisionists. I don't think there's any Dresden revisionists to say these people didn't die.
Well, actually, there is a kind of argument even about the Soviet figures during the war. But what we object to, though, is that we hear far, far more every day in our country about the fate of the Jews during the Second World War than any other people during that conflict.
Well, you got to admit, the Jews were kicked around pretty good during the war. I mean, as a people, even let's say we accept your premise that the camps didn't exist, well, the gas chambers
right.
didn't exist. You are talking about they're the only people who were uprooted as a single people and said, we want you out completely.
No,
who else?
No.
Who
and,
else?
Well, for one thing, a million, something like 14 million Germans were uprooted and kicked out of Eastern Europe at the end of the war, of whom 2 million died or were killed.
Okay, who kicked out the 14 million? Oh, the Germans came and, I mean, the Russians came and picked them up?
The Russians and the Americans and the British sat down at Potsdam and said, these Germans are going to be thrown out of their homelands.
Where they lived for centuries, yes.
All right.
Women, in fact, Bill, the point is that you, for example, was a reasonably educated fellow, and millions of Americans have never heard about this. Or, for that effect, Stalin uprooted and deported and killed millions of people. And yet, we hear far more of Hitler's victims even than we do of Stalin's, even though it's well established that Stalin's victims vastly outnumber Hitler's.
I think that's true. I think Stalin was, history is going to show us Stalin was
the biggest. Why don't we have any Stalin victim centers in the United States? Why don't we have any Stalin monuments or anti-communist sections of the U.S. government?
Because
we don't have that kind of emphasis. Yeah. We have an enormous emphasis on the fate of the Jews in the Second World War.
I'll tell you,
one-sided emphasis.
Right? I'll tell you why I think, as a lesson to the Jews, and I will agree that Stalin was as bad as Hitler in many, many ways. I think, number one, it was harder for the information to come out after the war. The Iron Curtain shut down after the war, and nothing came out. And I think a lot of that, the Russian government did as good a job as any totalitarian government could to make those facts known to no one.
Bill, that's not quite an excuse, because the real emphasis on Holocaust-mania, if you will, here in the United States did not really get going in this country until the 1970s, especially with this production of this NBC miniseries, The Holocaust. It was then that the big impetus began for things like the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Council. Granted, there was some of this before, but the word Holocaust was not even common currency until the 1970s.
I don't know. I heard it bandied about ever since I've been a kid. Let's go to the phones. Tim, calling from San Diego. Welcome to KFI.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah, I keep hearing Ted and Mark fall back on the notion that since these atrocities weren't documented, that they didn't happen. But that's totally unacceptable, because first of all, when people are committing war atrocities, they're not stupid enough to write them down. And in the second place, when Germany was being overrun, you know, fearing reproach, they destroyed all the evidence of these atrocities that they could. You know, so when they claim that they're scholarly professors who have all the facts and all the information, you know, it doesn't ring true. It sounds like a bunch of malarkey.
Well, you've raised a good point there, sir. There is a lot of documentation about Germany's wartime policy toward the Jews. There was a policy called the Final Solution, even. We have German documents about that. What is important is that none of this documentation, there is no documentation for any policy of extermination. That's clear. And the documents that do exist, and there are German documents, some of them were introduced into evidence at Nuremberg. These documents show that the German policy was one to expel the Jews from Europe, and then after the war, they were supposed to be sent to some other place completely different. Hitler himself in 1942 said privately to close colleagues that what he hoped was after the war, the Jews would be sent to Madagascar or some other Jewish national state. I mean, there is documentation, and the documentation does not support the Holocaust extermination story as we hear it.
Furthermore, there's no end of atrocities, and you can't invent if you claim that the people who carried them out meticulously destroyed the evidence. That was what we were told about Auschwitz. That 4 million people had been killed, and the traces that people had been burnt down to ash in crematoria. At a rate of operation, by the way, 10 times that of any state-of-the-art crematorium today. It's nonsense.
Well, we don't have any crematorium today that are built to take thousands of people in per day. I mean, come on.
They didn't have any of them then.
Well, that's your argument, but that's a specious argument. Say, we don't have any crematorium. We could easily build a crematorium if we wanted to gas 2 million people. It doesn't take a genius to figure this out.
Well, the functioning and workings of the German crematoria during the war are quite well known. In fact, at all sorts of concentration camps, from Majdanek to Dachau to Buchenwald, the crematoria were abandoned intact at the end of the war. There was no need to hide the crematoria, and I imagine that the engineers who designed them never dreamed that they'd be claimed to do away with bodies at 10 times the actual rate.
I'd like to refer to something that Mr. Aaron Breitbart mentioned earlier on, and that's this Lucha report. America's top foremost expert on gas chambers used to execute criminals here in the United States on execution hardware is an American engineer named Fred Lucha. Fred Lucha was selected and asked to investigate the alleged extermination gas chambers in Auschwitz and Majdanek in 1988 for a trial in Toronto, Canada. He was selected for this purpose not because of any views he held about the Holocaust, but because he is the acknowledged American expert on gas chambers. He investigated the so-called extermination gas chambers at Auschwitz, Auschwitz I, Auschwitz-Birkenau, and Majdanek, and he concluded categorically that they could not have been used for exterminating human beings. I accompanied Mr. Lucha on an investigation of the so-called execution gas chamber at Mauthausen, at Dachau, and at Hartheim, and he made a similar conclusion about that. He testified under oath in this, and has written a detailed report on this. Now, Mr. Breitbart earlier on was trying to discredit Mr. Lucha's findings. He's discrediting him. There's now an effort afoot to discredit Mr. Lucha because of his report and his findings on this subject.
Okay, this is Bill Handel sitting in for Joe Crummy. That's his name. Joe's back tomorrow night. We're discussing the Holocaust and Holocaust revisionism with Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate, and Ted O'Keefe, the editor of the Journal of Historical Review. We will be back at KFI right after this. And we're back at 8:46 here at KFI AM 640, and we're discussing the Holocaust with revisionists Mark Weber and Ted O'Keefe. For those of you that just tune in, revisionism is a different historical viewpoint of the Holocaust. Their position is, am I saying that wrong? Their position is that the gas chambers didn't exist, 6 million Jews didn't die in the gas chambers, and it's mainly a propaganda attempt by Jews and the Zionist organizations to make history what it isn't. That is the policy of the revisionists. I have a question to ask you, Ted. You're with the Journal of Historical Review,
right?
And there was a fascinating case in which several years ago, and I understand you weren't part of the organization at the time, so you're only talking historically here. I believe the journal offered a reward for anybody who could prove the Holocaust existed.
The Institute for Historical Review offered a reward for anyone who could prove that Jews were gassed at Auschwitz.
Why don't you move the whole thing a little closer to you?
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, and what happened was there was a gentleman by the name of Mel Mermelstein who presented some kind of proof. What kind of what did he present to you?
Well, he didn't present proof.
Well, what did he present to you?
He presented an affidavit purporting to recount his experiences while an inmate at Auschwitz for one night.
And the institute then said, that's not proof, we're not paying, right?
And then he sued.
Yes. And
the case was settled out of court after the judge declared that the Holocaust is a fact proven by judicial notice.
Okay.
An apology was issued by the IHR for emotional distress, and it was settled out of court. What's important, though, is that the matter of what the historical questions were not dealt with during the
court. Well, let me ask you, why did the Institute then issue an apology to Mr. Mermelstein? Was it a question of just staying alive as an institute?
Well, it was part of the settlement, and it was an apology only for the emotional distress caused to him.
Well, what emotional distress, though? If he presented fact, his position that the Holocaust existed, you say, no, it didn't, and the Holocaust didn't, in fact, exist as he described it, why would you, number one, want to settle? And number two, why would you apologize?
Because it was going to come up. There was every possibility that it would come up before a jury in Los Angeles. Mel's emotional hurt promised to bulk larger than the issue of historical truth, and the Institute might have been destroyed during this case. We settled at that point to avoid being financially ruined by court costs and a possible award. We apologized for any. As part of that settlement, for any emotional hurt we'd cause to survivors of Auschwitz, which we have no desire to do, and we've kept for the past 5 years, we've continued to challenge and investigate the Holocaust. We made no concessions whatsoever on that point,
okay.
Which is why Mr. Breitbart is so exercised about us.
All right, let's go to John calling first time from Santa Monica Mountains. John, welcome to KFI.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just curious about why these two guys got on the trip in the first place. I don't mean what they're doing, but why they got what started them off on this trip.
Well,
okay,
it's a good question, gentlemen.
Let me talk a little about my experience. When I was 15 years old, in high school, I saw a movie called The Mill of Death, Die Todesmühle. This movie purported to be a documentary about Dachau. In the course of the movie, statements were made to the effect that over 200,000 people had been killed in Dachau, many of them gassed. Pictures of the alleged gas chamber were shown. That was in 1964. In 1972, as a member of the United States Army, I traveled to Germany. I went to Dachau. I found out that the official concentration camp figures for dead given out by the International Committee, which runs the camp, which is not German. It's international, heavily Jewish. Their official figures were 30,000. They also claimed that the gas chamber... we dispute that it's actually a gas chamber, but in any case, they agreed with us that the gas chamber, whatever it was never used during the war. I was lied to as a teenager in school by a film. I became skeptical about the Holocaust story, and I've never stopped challenging it since then.
Okay, that's Ted O'Keefe, the editor of the Journal of Historical Review. Mark, how did you get involved?
I first became very interested in this in 1978 when these aerial photographs of Auschwitz were first made public. And what astounded me at the time was that Eli Wiesel and some others at the time claimed that these photographs not only proved that people were exterminated at Auschwitz, but that the United States government was guilty of permitting these people to be exterminated and callously allowed them to be exterminated. I went to the National Archives. I bought a copy of, several books on the subject. I began investigating. I'm a historian by training. I hold a bachelor's and a master's degree in European history. I began investigating this, and in fact, the head of the military branch at the National Archives conceded that these photographs do not show what Eli Wiesel and others. And what astounded me was that if this kind of distortion of evidence could take place in 1978, many years after the war, it seemed to me worthy of investigating to what extent there was a similar distortion during and right after at the end of the war, during the Nuremberg trials and so forth.
How many of you are there out there, by the way? Legitimately, let's not start.
Well, Holocaust revisionism is a worldwide movement, if you will. It probably has the strongest impact in France. A recent public opinion poll showed that a third of French people have doubts about the extermination story. The number of people who are absolute revisionists is very small, both in France and the United States and other places. But what's important is that there's actually a kind of official revisionism already taking place. Mr. Breitbart talked about it a little bit earlier when he referred to this big change in the Auschwitz figures. In recent years, this Dr. Arno Meyer, professor of history at Princeton University, he has come very close to the Auschwitz, revisionist view on this subject as well. In all around the world, there are people, and the movement is growing. One of the most important, you might say, converts or supporters in recent years was British historian David Irving, who's one of the best known, probably one of the most popular historians in the world. A few years ago, he was not a revisionist. Now he is, after investigating it himself.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Christine, calling from Los Angeles for the first time. You're on KFI, Christine.
Hi. I'm just so disgusted, I don't know what to say. First of all, I'm not Jewish. I'm a black American. And I've been to one of the concentration camps in Germany. I've walked on the courtyards myself. We were toured. It was a handful of students all over the United States. And we were shown what you said does not exist, a gas chamber.
How do you know it was a gas chamber?
I've seen it, yes.
Where were you, ma'am?
I was one of the Auschwitz. I can't pronounce it very much.
You were at Auschwitz?
Yes. Let me finish, please. And I'm trying to say, I'm not trying to be emotional. This is what I've seen and touched and with my five senses. I've seen one of these, what you say, fictitious gas chambers. I've seen what you say, these fictitious ovens. We were told by the German people who were taking us around, they were used. The gas chamber were used.
Well, ma'am, if you were in Auschwitz, you weren't shown by Germans. Auschwitz is in Poland. It's run by the Polish government.
There's a few of them. I know there's one or two or three different kinds of one, but I did go to one of the concentration camps in Germany.
You don't know. You're not sure which one. It might have been Dachau, for example. You're not sure then which one it was.
I went to about two of them, and I didn't want to see any more after that.
Well, okay. I just want to say
the main thing I do want to say is I did see a gas chamber. Okay.
Mm.
I'm not Jewish. Like I said, I'm not Jewish. I'm trying to.
I don't want to sound cruel, ma'am, but I submit if you don't know what country you're in when you were looking at this.
I was in Germany, sir, Germany.
All right.
You can try to speak me all you want. I'll just tell you what I walked and what I saw and what I touched,
right.
Okay?
Christine, we got to take a break. Hang on. We're going to be back. We're talking to Mark Weber and Ted O'Keefe, the Journal of Historical Review, Revisionists of the Holocaust. Bill Handel, sitting in for Joe Crummy. KFI will be back after this. We're back at 8:56, KFI AM 640. This is Bill Handel sitting in for Joe Crummy, and we are discussing Holocaust revisionism. Now, we have, the lines are jammed, as I said before, but let me give you phone numbers anyways. You can jot them down. As people hang up, please call in. If you're in the 714-619 area code, 1-800-553-4640. In the 213-818 area code, 5201-KFI. Now, I don't want to be unfair to you gentlemen. We're talking to Ted O'Keefe, editor of the Journal of Historical Review, and Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. These are Holocaust revisionists. But we have yet to find someone who's on your side here. And so I'm going to make a call. I would like someone who is basically in agreement with the revisionists to call in and tell us why and give us your end of it. Because the last thing I want to do is spend another hour, and we are going to go another hour on this subject. It is a very emotional subject. Not only am I emotionally caught up into it, my family was involved in the Holocaust. Everyone on my father's side was a victim of the Holocaust. I had an uncle who was shot in front of my father at a concentration camp in Yugoslavia. My father witnessed the killing of many, many people at a concentration camp called Jasenovac in Yugoslavia. My father was one of the premier witnesses several years ago at a trial of a man by the name of Andrea Artukovic, who was the Minister of Justice for the kingdom or the government of Croatia, which was the Ustashi government, the Nazi government that took over Yugoslavia during the war. And my dad was a victim of his atrocities and testified and was one of the people most responsible for having this man deported to Yugoslavia as a war criminal, which finally happened about 2-3 years ago. He since, I believe, died in jail over there.
You should know, Bill, that Andrei Artukovich's son, Rad, who lives in this area.
Oh, I know Rad very well.
Has succeeded in showing that the value of your father's testimony, that the testimony used to extradite Artukovich was faked, and the OSI is under investigation. from within the Justice Department, largely in response to Rod Artukovich's work on this case.
Maybe, but I will tell you that my dad witnessed the shooting of people, mm-hmm. and he's not lying about that. There'd be no reason for him to do that.
Well, we don't dispute that.
I don't know why, and you know, even if you did, I'm telling you, I mean, I have an eyeball witness who saw it. Anyways, we're going to continue on here, AKFI. I gave you the phone numbers, and I thank you for not disputing that. I mean, you could, but it's certainly fact to me.
Well, I may have been wrong in your father's case, but we trust you and we trust him. It certainly did happen in any case.
Right. Well, we
occasionally.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and go to Charles calling from a car phone in West Hollywood here on KFI. Charles, you've got about a minute and a half.
Make a quick statement. Basically, I think the American public and the world perhaps is very tired of, you know, giving a blank check to Israel and feeling, you know, how much do we have to pay for what the Jews suffered in World War II? And secondly, do you have a precise number of the number of Jews that you do think were killed in World War II?
You're talking to me, Charles? Or are you talking to Mark or Ted?
Precise number.
Charles, who are you asking? Hello? Charles just went off the phone.
He asked about a precise number.
All right, so let's go ahead. I will give you my understanding is I am in the old 6 million Jews camp. I was raised on 6 million Jews, and until it's proven differently, I will go with the general perception. But please give me your opinion.
My own feeling is probably that the number of Jews who died during the Second World War of all causes is in the neighborhood of a million or a million and a half. The 6 million figure, in fact, is not really seriously supported now by responsible historians of this subject. There's a kind of an argument going on even among those who support the basic Holocaust story.
What happened to the rest of them? I mean, even assuming they weren't gassed.
Well, you posit 6 million people, and then you wonder what happened to them.
Yeah,
it's the same
right.
thing. You say 4 million people were gassed at Auschwitz.
I don't, you know, I mean,
the number is reduced to a million. What happened to the rest of them?
I have a question. Are you saying that 4.5 million people or 5 million people were just made up, that didn't exist, that these people simply didn't exist? I mean, is that the contention here?
The 6 million figure comes from an affidavit during the Nuremberg trial. That's where the 6 million figure comes from.
You know what? We're going to come back.
Okay.
Spill Handle is KFI AM 640. We're talking Holocaust revisionism. There we go. I apologize. On KFI, I'm sitting in for Joe Crummy. This is KFI Los Angeles. We'll be back after this. 907 KFI AM 640. Welcome back. Bill Handel sitting in for Joe Crummy. Joe is ailing a little bit tonight. He'll be back tomorrow night, of course, from 7 to 10 o'clock. Tonight, following this show, Laura Schlesinger from 10 to 1 o'clock. I'll be sitting in for Tom Likas Thursday and Friday, and then again my regular show on Saturday morning, 7 to 11 o'clock. 7 till 9, Handel on the Law. And 9 to 11, easy for me to say, it'll be Handel Not on the Law. Tomorrow night, Joe has as his guest Melvin Belli, the irrepressible insane, but nicely so. The guy's the biggest character in the world. He'll be in studio. He's doing one of his major lawyer-like things, I assume. He's going to appear on The Golden Girls. He's the only attorney I know that does all these crazy things. So Melvin Belli, very, very interesting character, will appear tomorrow night, Joe Crummy, in studio. I want to remind you, by the way, Saturday at 1 p.m. here on KFI, the Raiders take on the Minnesota Vikings. Play-by-play is brought to you by General Electric and GTE. Raiders pregame coverage starts at 10 a.m., all here on KFI. The last 2 hours and this hour, we are really going to take this full board this evening. We're talking about a subject that is not only controversial, but raises emotions to an extraordinary height among many, many people in our society, and that is the Holocaust. The first 20 minutes of the program from 7 to 7:20, we had Aaron Breitbart, the senior researcher from the Simon Wiesenthal Center, who spent 20 minutes basically ripping into and attacking the two gentlemen that are with me, Mark Weber, director of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, and Ted O'Keefe, the editor of the Journal of Historical Review. And the reason they were attacked is they are Holocaust revisionists, which means they want to rewrite the history that we know of the Holocaust and make three basic contentions. Number one, the German plan to eliminate the Jews during World War II did not exist. There were no gas chambers at the various camps to eliminate the Jews, and the figure of 6 million Jews that died in these camps is nowhere near the reality by many millions. Matter of fact, probably 5/6 if I might understand correctly. And on in studio is Mark Weber, who is the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust and also is connected with the Institute of Historical Review. And by the way, one of the reasons and the reason that Aaron Breitbart refused to debate these is that the policy of the Simon Wiesenthal Center is that they will not debate Holocaust revisionists. It's just that simple. They'll come on before, they'll come on after, but they will not debate head on. Gentlemen, did that pretty well introduce you fairly succinctly, fairly? Yes. Any problems with that?
I might point out that despite the fact
Ted,
that
go ahead.
Despite the fact the Simon Wiesenthal Center claims to be too good to debate us, they don't mind using Holocaust revisionism in their fundraising pitches, and they don't mind attempting to not merely dismiss us and Holocaust revisionists, but to infringe on our freedom of speech around the world. The Simon Wiesenthal Center is for making Holocaust revisionism a crime.
Okay. I don't think the contention was they're too good for you, Ted. Mm-hmm. I think the contention is that Jonas Salk would not debate a voodoo medicine man on the merits of science versus voodoo medicine, and they think that the revisionism is simply such a bunch of bunk that it isn't worth debating. I mean, well, I think that was a contention that I got.
Comparisons like that are odious. The man came on to talk about historical revisionism. He was afraid to face us and talk to us head-to-head. Let listeners draw their own conclusions.
All right, let me go and give you the phone numbers if you want to join the conversation. If you're in the 714-619 area code, 1-800-553-4640. If you're in Los Angeles or the San Fernando Valley, it's a 213 or 818 area code, 5201-KFI. Let's go to Jerry, first-time caller from Los Angeles. Jerry, you're on KFI.